Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a great guest. She talks about subjects that I really like talking about. Her name is Karen Fraser. So, Karen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nancy. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, Karen, what I usually do with my guests is I let them talk a little bit about who they are and what prompted you to do what you do now. So let's start when you were like a little bit younger and things start happening for you.
Oh, sure. I actually have sort of a basis in science and have always been kind of a very scientific person. And when I was in my early 20s, I lived in an apartment in Bremerton, Washington. It was old Navy housing, and really strange things happened in that apartment. And it was really a difficult thing for me to process because I was such a scientific person, but things would happen like faucets would turn themselves on and off. And latched cupboard doors would open and close and all sorts of things like that. And so it was very confusing for me. One day I went out shopping and I came home, and I was 21, so we had a 6-foot-tall inflatable Godzilla that sat in our living room, and I walked in the house, and it was sitting in the middle of my bed. And since my husband was out to sea at the time, that didn't make any sense to me. And in the middle of the night, I'd be lying in bed, and you could hear footsteps walk into the room, and I could feel the bed depress next to me, and someone would lean down and whisper, "I love you," in my ear. So I moved.
Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah. And I had never really thought much about the existence of ghosts or anything like that, but very clearly something was going on in this apartment that was beyond the norm. And that sort of just percolated for about 20 years. And a few years ago, it all came back to me, and I started to think about it. And what it became was an avid fascination with the paranormal, because now I wanted to explain what had happened to me. And I had gone in the intervening 20 years without really believing in ghosts, and even gone as far as not necessarily disbelieving, but also not believing in the human soul. I just didn't know. There was no proof one way or another. And like I say, I have sort of this scientific basis to me. And so I just all of a sudden came to a place in my life where I needed to know and I needed to understand things. So I began very vigorously pursuing and investigating the paranormal. And about 2 years ago, I started working as a reporter for a paranormal magazine called Paranormal Underground. And in that capacity, have had the chance to sort of track down these places that are reportedly haunted, so that I could basically in my quest for the human soul and to find out whether we really have one or not.
Mm-hmm. Did anything happen to you when you're like really, really younger? I mean, did you feel anything like, you know, when you're, say, maybe 6 to 10, or did you just not really pay attention, or were you not aware?
Well, I think that I am a somewhat sensitive and empathic person. I wouldn't go as far as to say psychic, but when I am around people, I'm bombarded by feelings that I don't own, that don't belong to me. Mm-hmm. And that has been since I was a very, very young child. And at a very young age, I learned to shut that down and block that out.
Why did you shut that down? Because, see, a lot of people do, Karen, whether they're afraid or they're told, no, can't be, don't do that, people are going to think you're strange. So why did you shut it down?
Well, I was raised in the church, and I think that might be part of it. I lacked the capacity to understand it, and I also didn't really talk to anybody about it. I was kind of a private, secret little girl. I didn't really share a lot with people. I was six. It's hard, five, six, something like that. It's hard to say why I did what I did, but that was just how I coped with something that I didn't understand, and that's also, I think, why I became so firmly rooted in science as well, because that was tangible and explainable.
Yeah, our left brain likes us to be very logical about many, many things, where our right side is just, oh, man, let me see what's really out there, what's really going on, man, let me feel this, let me know it, and
mm-hmm.
we struggle with that.
Well, and what's so funny about it is that I actually am very right-brained. The left brain is what I've had to work to be, mm-hmm. and it's not who I am. That's not my default position.
And it's really funny because truly most people are not left-brained. They've just been taught to believe that.
Yeah.
Or like you, you know, they've grown up in a you know, church-type family, and it's like, oh, you can't do that. You know, no, you can't do that. You can't tell anybody. You know, so a lot of children will shut it down at a very early age, or something may scare them. You know, like you may have seen a ghost and not really know what it is and really scared the bejeebies out of you. Like, don't want to do that again. You know, so there's a lot of reasons that people shut down. But the truth of the matter, and I'm sure you agree with me, Karen, is that once you stay open, there's just so many wonderful, glorious things that you actually get to find out about.
Oh, absolutely. The stuff that I've done in the past couple of years is stuff that I've secretly wondered about all of my life, and I've been very in the closet about it. Because it was kind of embarrassing to me, which is silly now, but during the time that I had all of this curiosity, and I did, since the time I was a very young child until I was an adult, I read books about it and things, but it was always very much in secret. So the fact that now it's out in the open, and this is who I am, and I talk to my family about it, and they don't necessarily understand, but they support me, and I talk to anybody about it, and I'm okay. If they don't understand that, then that's okay. If they want me to explain it to them, then I will, and if they don't, I'm cool with that, too.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever find out who the person was that was coming into your bedroom and saying, I love you?
No, I would love to go back to that apartment. Now, I, as a matter of fact, if I lived there, I would stay.
Mm-hmm.
because now I think it's cool. I would love to go back to that apartment and investigate it and see what it's like. And I think a lot of people who have kind of early experiences that they shut down or ignored or ran from as they get older probably feel the same way that I do now, which is, man, I wish I knew what that was about.
you probably would have been even more into it than you were if you had stayed.
Yeah, probably so. I lived there for about a year, I think, before I took off.
Well, that was pretty good. Most people freak out after the first month or two and go, I'm out of here. You know?
Well, I had a really good denial mechanism in place.
that's very good. Now, in your investigations, because you've, you know, not just investigated ghosts, you investigated many, many things.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all the things that you've investigated so far, what has been your favorite?
I had two past life regression hypnotherapy sessions. And I have to tell you, that's something that I have always been fascinated by, is past lives and reincarnation. It's one of the things that whenever anything would come out about it, whether it was a novel or a movie or any book or anything, I would just eat it up. And at the same time as I was reading all of this, my logical brain would say, well, it's not real. It doesn't exist. This is all in your head. And when I had the opportunity to go in-depth investigating that, I had a past life regression. I talked with a guy named Jeffrey Keane who wrote a book called Someone Else's Yesterday, and it's actually like one of the most documented cases of what appears to be a reincarnation of a Civil War general. And all of these things that I got to do and the people I got to talk to in learning about this for the issue of the magazine that we put out here about a year and a half ago, it was amazing, and it really opened up a whole new world for me. I think it sort of started everything as far as me moving from being this, not a disbeliever, but sitting on the fence into this place where I believe in all sorts of things that I didn't before.
Mm-hmm. When I was 6 years old, I had a really freaky accident, and I landed with my head and neck under my back. So by all rights, I should be paralyzed or dead, and I'm really neither one, by far, okay? But from that time on, my angels have been talking to me and telling me all kinds of things. I mean, about what's going on in the world today and all the things that are still yet to come. But as a child, you know, it was a little scary because, I mean, they want you to know. And they will give you as much as they think you can accept, at
mm-hmm.
least on my side, you know, from what I understand. But it was very, very interesting because when I was growing up, I wasn't really restricted because of religion or anything. But, however, I really never told anybody because every time I was going to go approach somebody, like, for example, I knew that they were going to die just by looking at them at age 6.
Ooh.
Okay, but, you know, it was okay because every time I went to approach somebody, you know, and ask them if they're okay or be careful or something like that, this beautiful voice would tell me, it's all right. It's not, you know, up to you. It's their destiny. They've chosen it. They're going to go to a better place. You have to leave it be. So I never really, you know, told anybody anything, but experienced many, many things. But I loved it because it was like, oh, well, you know, they didn't tell me this was going to happen. And, you know, a month or two was like already happening. I thought, man, this is really cool, you know. And so I grew up being very protected by my angels, where I wasn't put out there, quote, as display, like, you know, telling somebody something that could make me look bad or maybe people think I was crazy and, you know, ship me off to a mental institute.
Right, yeah.
You know? And at the same time, I was in a couple car accidents, and they actually saved my life, or I had been killed because of the accident. And so to let people know, I wrote a book called Raised by Angels, and it's about my life, you know, and what I grew up knowing and how everybody can, you know the same stuff if they just allow it. And it's kind of a unique book because it's a self-help book at the same time, but it was really fascinating because I didn't really write it. It was channeled to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which, I understand, yeah.
Yeah, which a lot of books are channeled to people, whether they realize that or not.
Oh, I believe my writing comes through me, not from me.
Yeah, see, and I was just going to tell you just by, you know, looking at your site and going over the info in there that it's probably the same for you. And people, you know, kind of wonder, well, how could that be? But, you know, there is a bigger, bigger thing going on in the whole universe that we're eventually learning about and picking up on. So it was very fun for me, but I wrote it without even knowing what I wrote. You know, so
yeah.
It was kind of interesting. But now you've written a few books. So let's talk about your book that you have out right now, and then we'll talk about the one that's coming out in July.
Okay.
And then we'll go backwards a little bit, okay?
Okay, great.
Tell us about the first one that's out now.
Okay, the book that's out now is called Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington. And it tells the story of a place that I first visited just this past July, July 11th of 2009. It's a former town. Now it's a ghost town. There's a few crumbling foundations and not much else there. It's called Wellington, Washington. And this is the place where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States in terms of human life lost took place. And from the minute, and it happened in 1910, March 1st of 1910, so from the minute I heard about Wellington, and I hadn't heard the story of Wellington or anything up until probably a little over a year ago now, but from the very minute I heard the story of Wellington, I was strangely drawn to it. My husband says it's almost unnaturally, compulsively drawn to it, and I had to go. Well, the thing about the town of Wellington is that an avalanche disaster occurred there with... it was actually a train sitting on a railroad track, and the avalanche came down, and it knocked the train into a ravine and killed 96 people. So it sits high in the mountains, and it's under snow for several months a year, usually from the end of November until about this time of year. And so you can't access it. So I heard about maybe February or March. I wasn't able to get to Wellington until July 11th. And when I did, I was still sort of in my very skeptical, you know, well, I'm not sure, there's no proof that ghosts exist. There's, you know, not a lot of proof that the human soul exists, but let's go check this out. I'm really drawn to this place. And I was there for maybe 5 or 6 hours that night. And by the time I left, I believed in ghosts because of all of the things that go on up there. And so since then, I've been very drawn to the place, and we spent most of last summer up there. We were attempting to film a documentary, but it didn't work out, and so I wrote a book about it instead because I felt like that was what I had to do, that was my job, was to tell the story of what happened at Wellington and to let people know that the spirits are still there, and also maybe to help somebody else along a journey to understand that the human soul does exist. And as soon as you understand that, that eliminates a whole lot of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what the book's about, and that's why I wrote it.
What were some of the experiences that you felt or got while you were there?
There are so many. When the very first time I was there, the site now where it sits, there's a parking lot, and this is in a very beautiful location. It's up in the woods. There's a hiking trail now called the Iron Goat Trail. It sits in the North Cascades in Washington State. And so there's a parking lot, and then you sort of hike down the trail. And as you hike down the trail, what is there now is this huge half-mile-long concrete snowshed that they built after the avalanche disaster to protect the trains that were still coming through there, because this was, of course, hugely tragic. 96 people died. So the snowshed still sits there. There's not railroad track there anymore. It's just a snowshed in the trail. And the minute you enter that snowshed, you feel something. And what I said at the time, because I came home and wrote about it the very next day, it was just that compelling to me. What I said at the time is that you can feel the weight of history when you enter this snowshed. Well, I understand now that that's not what you're feeling. What you're feeling is whatever is going on with the spirits up there. Sometimes you go in there and it feels light and happy and fun, and you sort of have an interesting time there. And sometimes you go and you feel it feels heavy and malevolent, and maybe you're going to experience some darker things. So I've seen up there, I've seen a full-body apparition. I've interacted with a child, maybe more than one. You hear voices, you capture recordings of things. Some friends of ours who investigate up there very regularly, Northwest Paranormal Investigation Agency, actually has videos on their website. They captured what I think is this little child that I've interacted with. They actually captured a video of him peeking out from behind one of the support structures of the snow shed. And that's on their website. It's really interesting to go see. It's nwpia.com. And I recommend people go see that because it's pretty convincing. So those are just some of the things. I've been touched more than once. I've had my kids up there. My kids have been touched. I have a really cute video of my son who was 12 at the time, and we were standing in the middle of the snow shed, and he was talking along, and it was dark, and my husband was filming it, and all of a sudden you see him jump sky high, and he said, "Something just touched my leg." It's great. He doesn't like it much, but I think it's pretty entertaining.
Sounds like that would be fun.
Yeah, so. It is, and it's a really cool place, because for the most part up there, the spirits are very nice. They're people without bodies, and the interactions up there are positive. And so I love it up there. It's a really cool place, and it's a good place to take people who don't believe in ghosts.
Probably scare a few of them, I'm sure. Usually, though, at a tragic scene or a heavy war scene, there are spirits that are there, and people who can be empathic, in other words, feel things or, you know, kind of feel emotions of something, usually can pick something up. And it does surprise a lot of people when they do that, because it's like, you know, I just want to cry, but I don't know why I want to cry. I just want to cry.
Yep.
And usually they don't know they're picking up somebody else's emotions of whatever they might have gone through.
Yes, and I definitely noticed that when I was there. And it was a little shocking to me at first. Even though I'd been places that were reportedly haunted, my reaction to this place was very different than any other place that is supposedly haunted.
Could it be that maybe it's a reincarnation of you?
Well, I'll tell you what, that sure has been suggested to me. It's been suggested to me by a couple people, actually, who are psychics. I had never had a psychic reading, and I just had one recently to write an article for the magazine, because I thought, you know, all this stuff I explore, and I've never had a psychic reading. And so I had a reading with a psychic medium named Jennifer Hicks, and in that, it was all of these spirits from Wellington. It wasn't my dead grandmother. It wasn't anybody who was related to me. It was all of these spirits from Wellington. And that was one of the things that they said is, well, you were there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'd love to find out.
Usually when you're drawn like that to something that, you know, that heavy,
mm-hmm.
you were part of it at some point in time, whether it was before it all happened and some of your relatives may have died there or something. But,
right.
you know, with an attraction like that, you usually have some kind of a very strong connection.
Yes.
And that usually indicates that you've been there or, you know, a part of you has been there at some point in time.
Yeah, and I do feel, I still, to this day, I feel a very strong connection. As a matter of fact, on the 100-year anniversary, which was March 1st of this, you know, just this past winter, we were able to get up to the site, and we had to take four-wheel drives, and we had to dig, and we had to hike in snow, you know, uphill both ways in the snow. It was kind of like that. We had to hike in very deep snow to get there, and we spent the night there because the avalanche happened at 1:42 a.m., and we wanted to be there at the exact moment that it was, and it was very important to me that I was there for that. I, you know, you couldn't have stopped me from going.
So when that happened, did you feel something at that moment?
You know, I didn't, which tells me that what I suspected going in anyway, which is that spirits probably aren't real aware of dates and anniversaries. You know, that's important to us in this realm. I think it's less important to them. However, I did, as I sat there and I thought about it, I could see what it was like with these people in the village, in the town of Wellington, hearing the snow coming down the hill and hearing the cries and hearing the crashes and running out in this deep, deep snow. This had been a snowstorm that had gone on for 9 days.
Wow.
I mean, so it was, and it sometimes snowed as much as a foot an hour. It was freezing cold and a horrible, horrible storm that led to all of this. And these people ran out and they had to dive into the wreckage of these trains as if they were diving into a river. They had to dive in head first to pull the bodies out. And I could connect to and feel some of that because I was sitting out there 100 years later on that date in the cold. And so it gave me somewhat more of a sense of that.
Mm-hmm. The world that you're talking about, they know no time frame. So when you talk about how they don't really do anniversaries, that's very true because their time frame is now, not 100 years later.
Exactly, exactly. And that was sort of what I suspected, but, you know, it was a good theory to test out to see if anniversaries held any weight or not.
Oh, sure. You know, you got to check out all of those questions because otherwise there will be no answer.
That's right.
Now, you have another book coming out in July. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's called Supernatural, Exploring the Mysteries of Our Universe. And what's funny about it is I actually wrote the Supernatural book before I'd been to Wellington and before I wrote the Wellington book. And I wrote it from the position of being this kind of agnostic about everything. And I hadn't revisited it since I'd been to Wellington, and here about 2 months ago I went back and revisited it because a lot of it talked about how on the fence I was about everything. So, of course, it was written from an entirely different point of view, so I had to make some changes to it.
But, you know, that's okay. Changes are good sometimes.
That's right.
You know, so you got to do something. Now, when you're writing for the Paranormal Underground magazine, what kind of stories do you write about?
I will write about absolutely anything paranormal. I've written about and everything from UFOs to near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences to the past life stuff, which was my absolute favorite issue I ever did. And I interview people who investigate the paranormal. We write about cryptids, although I haven't written any articles about cryptids, I don't think. No, I haven't. And, you know, so we write anything that's sort of in that realm of the paranormal and spiritual. I write a blog for Paranormal Underground, too, and in that, a lot of times what I write about is sort of my searching that I've done for the human soul and for finding deeper meaning in all of it. Because although ghosts sound like something that's way out there and very different from a more spiritual thing, I think it's very connected. Mm-hmm. And I think that when people that are searching for ghosts are really what they're doing is they're seeking the human soul. And I know that's what I'm doing. With everything I've done, that's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. If somebody wanted to get a hold of you, Karen, how would they do that?
Well, they can email me, Karen Frazier, Frazier, at paranormalunderground.net. And they can visit the paranormalunderground.net website, or I also have my own website, which is KarenFrazier.com, and the book has a website, avalancheofspirits.com, and both of those have contact forms, too. So I'm pretty easy to get a hold of.
It's good. Now, you also have another book coming out in October.
The Namaste Project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's been an interesting one for me. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about that. The Namaste Project, which is at namasteproject.org, basically was something that I was going through a really rough patch with a lot of people in my life to the point that they just made me crazy, and I just didn't want to deal with them because they were so, I felt that they were so difficult. So one day I was driving up the hill to my house thinking about this, and the words Namaste Project popped into my head along with this whole concept for this project. And because I'm a writer and because I'm a communicator, I made it public as opposed to just doing something on my own. But essentially what it does is it challenges people to spend 100 days attempting to see the light in absolutely every person they encounter, whether it's the person that helps them at the grocery store or the guy that cuts them off in traffic or the person that they consider really, you know, the biggest boon on their existence. And so I did this, and I just finished doing my 100 days of Namaste here within the past couple of weeks. And it was life-altering in so very many ways. And the reason that I suggest people do it is because I think that a shift in consciousness and a change in how we respond to each other and the universe happens one person at a time. And so I wanted to be that one person where that change happens. And if it inspires other people to do it as well, then that's great. So I'm writing a book about my 100 days of Namaste as well.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that we really, all human mankind, needs to get back to is the love of each other. Because it's been lost, and it's been lost for a very long time. And it really is making the earth itself very unbalanced. With the energy that comes from it.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to like somebody who crossed, you know, cut you off the road, because the first thing you want to do is give them the high sign and a few choice words. Okay?
Yeah, you're right.
And that's normal according to what we have been raised with, especially, you know, in, say, the last 25 years.
Yeah.
You know, and the children that are coming here today and have been coming in for the last 10 or 15 years are actually coming up with total true love in their heart, and then they're put into this energy that is just chaotic, with easy to say.
Yeah, all the indigos.
Yeah, and it, it's really making it very hard on them to keep going in this energy. And so a lot of those children are being told that they have ADD, ADHD, all kinds of stuff.
Right.
And they're being drugged. And it's like, you know, the drugs aren't really going to help. It's a Band-Aid. So if everybody, you know, could do the 100 days of Namaste, it would probably really alter a lot of the energy that is bad to make it very positive. So I think it's really a very good idea.
Well, and it altered the energy in my life in such a way. And what I discovered as I went through this, and I blogged about it. If you go to namasteproject.org and you read the blog, I blogged from day one. I didn't blog every day, but pretty darn close. I blogged from day one to day 100. And it's very interesting for me, and it may not be for somebody else, I don't know, but it's very interesting for me to see the shift and the things that I discovered as I went along. Because I always think, who am I to tell anybody what to do? Who am I to set myself up as an example for somebody else? Because, quite frankly, I'm just as flawed of a human being as everybody else. And, you know, I'm your everyday average soccer mom who is just getting by in my life the best I can. But what I discovered about myself is that in order to find the light in other people, I had to do something very important first, and that was to find the light in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I'm not unusual in the fact that that's something that I've struggled with my entire life, because we make ourselves not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't find that we're okay, then we're never going to find out that anybody else is okay either. And so it was a very humbling process for me as I went through this and realized where a lot of this was coming from. So, but it was a good experience, and it's something that I still, it's not now like I walk around with a, you know, big Zen smile on my face. I still every single day have to remind myself that A, I'm perfect just the way I am, and B, so is everybody else.
Yeah, see, and, you know, we're actually raised to think we're not okay, mm-hmm. and that we're not perfect, mm-hmm. and that we don't have any rights or whatever you want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very, very hard, to say the least, on people in general. It's very, very hard on the energy, because when people can't look at themselves in a mirror and go, I like me, I love me, and they only look in the mirror and go, oh, you look so ugly today, you know, it changes a lot of the energy
yes.
that this earth is trying to get rid of.
Yes. Well, but it also takes tremendous amounts, at least it did for me, tremendous amounts of self-honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very, that level of honesty with yourself is very difficult, because it's so easy to delude ourselves into thinking, I like myself just fine, I'm okay, and everything I do is okay. But the bottom line is that the things that we do and the choices we make and the way that we judge ourselves and other people and that other people judge us eats away at us a little bit at a time. And I think that most people have these deeply held beliefs about themselves that they don't even know are there.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly did, and I certainly still do, but I'm better at finding that now and realizing that those beliefs are only holding me back and holding the world back.
Mm-hmm. There was a book that came out a long, long time ago called I'm Okay, You're Okay.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it. I've never read it, but yeah.
Okay, it's actually a fun book to read, because it does talk about how you can, you know, like yourself and love yourself and not have everybody think you have this humongous ego, like you're better than everybody else. And it's got some humor in it, but it's a very truthful book, because, you know, it goes into explanations about, you know, how our energies are, you know, depleted, how our positive energy is taken away and what we're taught to believe, and then it all has to be turned around at some point in time, or we, you know, end up not a very happy camper.
Yeah.
So it's a very old book, but it really is an old book that's worth reading, because a lot of the things that's going on in the world today, this book actually kind of touched on it a long, long time ago. I mean, I think the book is probably 20, 25 years old by now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's kind of like we just keep repeating the same stuff over and over again, and at some point in time, you've got to realize that if we keep repeating the negative, we're only going to get the negative.
Yes. Well, and you know, while it sounds like the things that I'm talking about are totally unrelated to one another, you know, here on one hand, I do all this paranormal stuff, and on the other hand, I have the Namaste Project. They're all very much related to each other, and I think that what I've discovered throughout all of this, that the most important thing truly is that all of these things bring you into a point of present time focus,
mm-hmm.
and that's where you can learn to be okay with yourself, and that's where you can learn to listen to, like you, listen to your angels or listen to the spirits that are around you or feel the messages that you're getting is when you let yourself be right here, right now, as opposed to in the past and in the future and worrying and in pain from things that have happened. That's where you can get okay with yourself and okay with the universe is right now.
Yeah, and it really has to be right now, and I don't mm-hmm. think people understand that. You know, people will hold on to hurts, pains, angers, and guilt because they don't know any other way in their mind, they think.
Right.
And so they hold on to it, and what really happens is whatever you tuck inside, whatever you hold on to, it's like tucking in a magnet. You're just going to keep pulling that same kind of energy to you over and over and over and over again. At some point in time, it's probably going to make you sick.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
as soon as people start to realize that, then they have to figure out how to be able to let it go, because most people that I talk to will say, well, but I don't know how to let go.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know.
That's been one of my struggles. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want to do one of the techniques that I use, all right, it's called the Let Go Letter, and it's designed, and I've used it for 35 years now, to help people let go of all past hurts, pains, angers, and guilt. And it works really, really well. It is not easy to do, and it's very hard to do. And people
nothing worthwhile ever is, huh?
No, it's not. So people start it, and then they'll go, well, I can't do this. But if they just complete it, it really does make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on my website. So if you want to go check it out, to try it, it really is pretty good.
Yeah, but I will.
Just go to Nancy's Psychic Resources www.justabovethepage.com.
Mm-hmm.
Go all the way down to the bottom of the page, just above the address, and it has a line that says, like, home, readings, books, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of that, it says, let go letter. And what you do is click on it. It's going to come up, print it out, read it, and then follow it exactly to a T. There are no shortcuts to this process.
Yeah.
And it takes you as long as it takes you.
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't everything take you as long? And you know what's great about it is that it can feel like something that's going to take forever, and then in an instant you can get it.
Oh, yeah. And that's kind of how this is. You go in there thinking, oh, my God, I remember all these things it's going to take. But it's not. When you end up writing from your heart, it happens so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have to keep up with your handwriting because you actually handwrite it. You don't put it on a computer. You don't type it. You know, because that hand-eye coordinations with your emotions make a big thing. You know, so it is. It's very hard to do, but it really is worth doing, and it does help. So if you're still, you know, fighting a few things like that, you might want to try it.
No. Yeah, you know, I always fight stuff like that, and I certainly am way better than I was 6 months ago, a year ago, 10 years ago. But it's human nature. We sort of cling to what we know and what's familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that really was helpful for me is, I don't know if you're familiar with Byron Katie.
But
Byron Katie's stuff I find also just really powerful. And Radical Forgiveness, and his name is escaping me right now.
I interviewed him.
Colin Tipping, is that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he's wonderful too. So it sounds like what you have on your site, and I'll definitely look it up, is kind of along the lines of that stuff, and I find those very powerful tools. And sometimes another thing that I find is a very powerful tool is I just sit down and let that writing come with me, come through me, because the wisdom is in there.
Oh, yeah, it's there. It's very much there. And, you know, so when people start writing from their heart, it really does make a big difference. You know, whoever or whatever technique you use, it just works when you write from your heart. It's not a think process if you can do it.
No, you can't think about it. That's just it. That's what's gotten me in trouble all of my life, is that I'm a thinker. Because if when I was 4, 5, 6 years old, instead of thinking about all of these things that I was experiencing, I allowed it, I think that it would have been a very different life for me, really. And you can't go back and say, well, I should have done that. But what I'm saying is that now that I've come to a place where instead of my default position is no longer thinking about things, it's allowing things. And then sometimes I think about them anyway.
I tell people that thinking that most people do, all it does is get you old, tired, wrinkled, frustrated, and make wrong choices.
Oh, yeah, it's noise.
And then you beat yourself up because it's like, I knew I should have done it that first way. Why didn't I listen to myself?
I know. Well, and that's what this writing for the Paranormal Magazine and doing the stuff that I did with the past lives and all of that, that's what that's been so good for me, is that I'm in a place in my life right now where I'm following things very intuitively, and it just feels better.
See, it will feel better because that's natural.
Yeah, it just feels better to get out of bed in the morning.
Yep, it really does. Now, are you still a director of productions and public relations for Ghost Night Media?
Yeah, that's actually a new little business that we started in the past year or so, and we have some documentaries planned, and we're working on publishing some books for people. And what we want is we just want to create a place where people can express in creatively, however it is, whether it's through a radio show or podcast or through a book or a movie or whatever it is, where they can get some help expressing sort of these things that expand the way that people look at the universe.
Yeah, a lot of things are changing. Now, you did some investigating about UFOs. There's this big thing going on with UFOs today, you know, because our government still wants to try to deny them. But there's so many sightings coming in now, and sightings are going to continue, that they're going to have a very hard time trying to debunk all of that.
Yeah.
So when you were investigating some of them, is there any that you checked out that came out really, really strong that had really good proof to it?
Well, I have to tell you, I did a lot of what I learned about the UFOs was through talking with Stanton Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever interviewed Stan, you know he's just a great guy. he's kind of a walking soundbite, and has but the things that he's researched are pretty compelling, what he's come up with about what happened at Roswell, and the Betty and Barney Hill abduction case, and some of the older things that are from, you know, the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and things like that. I think that that stuff is very compelling. I just think that we're good at covering it up.
Yeah, but it's actually all unfolding, and I'm pretty sure the governments, not just ours, but governments all around the world, are really not going to have a choice very much longer but to say, yes, it is true, they have been here, blah, blah, blah. Because it doesn't matter if you go to the Great Pyramids or you go to the Hopi Indians. Wherever you go, they have things that show that they have been here for many thousands of years.
The Bible has a UFO in it.
Mm-hmm.
Ezekiel. You know, Ezekiel saw the wheel.
Yep.
So yeah, and that was one of the things when I interviewed Stanton Friedman that I actually asked him about, was some of these legends throughout from all of these various faiths and native people and things. I asked him about that, and he said, yeah, what else would it be? You know?
Yeah, well, it's pretty hard to figure out. There's a stick figure with a head and a big circle around the head that encompasses the entire thing, that something's got to be around their head.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And, you know, I know that there are all sorts of little logical ways that you can try to explain that away. And I actually wrote and did research on abduction phenomena. And that was really interesting to me, too, because there's such a dichotomy in the research that's taking place. And what happens is that the results always wind up, not intentionally, I don't think, but skewed in the direction of whatever the researcher believes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see people who do this abduction phenomena, and there's people from Harvard University who have researched this and come up with totally different conclusions, and one of them is, you know what, these people are probably being abducted by aliens, they're mentally sound, you know, this is probably what's happening. And then there's this whole other branch that's saying, no, it's that they want to be recognized, and maybe they have some little personality quirks, and so they feel like they need to belong to a group, so they create this whole scenario combined with sleep paralysis. And I mean, it's a very complicated explanation, where the other one where they say, well, yeah, they're probably being abducted by aliens, is a really simple explanation. So you can get there. You can get anywhere you want to go.
Mm-hmm. They came out with a movie, I think it was last year, called The Fourth Kind.
Oh, yeah, I saw it. Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty good movie. I saw it, too. Everybody said, you know, what did you think of it? To me, I said, I thought it was kind of fun. They go, man, it scared the you-know-what out of me. Like, well, okay. But, you know, she had some very interesting facts. And,
yeah. You
know, they've tried to do her in several times to make it look like she's just crazy. But,
yeah. You
know, when they try to do somebody in that badly, chances are they're afraid of what the truth may be.
Yeah, well, I wanted that movie to be scarier, darn it. You know, that's the one thing I have to tell you, is that I used to be able to go to a movie and get the bejesus scared out of me,
mm-hmm.
or read a book like The Amityville Horror and have it
right. Scare
the crap out of me. None of that scares me anymore.
But you know why it doesn't? It's because you're in a better position now than you were before.
I know, but I like that kind of being scared, so I do miss that. I've got to tell you, I miss that, the something that really scares the heck out of me. Nothing scares me anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I go to the movies to watch the effects, because the effects are so great and they're so cool, and you really have to wonder, how did this person come up with those effects? Like the Star Wars. I mean, how did he come up with those?
Avatar, what they did with that movie. Holy cow. It's creative genius that you know, comes through us. I would love to say that I'm just a brilliant writer and everything I write is because I'm so great, but it comes from somewhere, and it's probably not me.
Yeah, well, you know, most of those people, I would think, have some kind of ties with someplace else, whether they know it or not.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I find it very, very fascinating, because that's one of the things that I really like. I like the UFO thing because I know they're there. I've been, like I said, shown different things since I was a kid. And so I get to see a lot of different things. And it's not that it scares me. Some of it surprises me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that it scares me, because it's things are just going to be going on.
Yeah.
And one of the things is that they've shown me that there will be many, many more sightings of UFOs all around the world.
I think UFO sightings are really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things that I've sort of always been on the fence about is UFOs. I certainly believe we're not alone in the universe.
No.
But, yeah, I find all of that stuff really interesting, and I always have since I was little. I've been interested in all of this stuff since I was little.
See, then it really shouldn't surprise you too much that they want to come through you and let you know that they're there.
Well, one of the things I've been working on doing is, because I have a lifetime of blocking all of this information
mm-hmm.
out. Just a lifetime. I'm 44 years old, and I've been blocking it out since I was a little kid. So, you know, that's a pretty good track record. I've gotten pretty adept at it to the point that it's a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying really hard to sort of focus in and allow, like I say, to allow this information to come. And it's tough because my natural, it's not my natural, but my defense mechanism now is to block it. And, like, I can close my eyes, and I constantly have pictures flashing through my brain that have nothing to do with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've ignored them for so long, and now I try to focus in on them, and they're just so ephemeral. They're so hard to grasp because I've ignored them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a muscle that you have to flex like any other.
Yeah, it is. And you just have to kind of allow. Like, I live in New Mexico. Now, New Mexico has a lot of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And my backyard is actually mountains. And so I get to see a lot of things. And the first couple times when I saw some of the things, I went, man, I just have to be absolutely crazy because this just is not happening. But then I know better because I usually go with my right brain no matter what. You know,
yeah.
My left brain is kind of left dormant, actually. But one night, and I go to bed very late, so one night I was up at about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and my bedroom faces due east to the mountains. And I just always look out the window, you know, before I go to bed, because I like to see the stars and, you know, see what's out there. And above the mountain was this huge, huge white ball. And it wasn't moving, so I knew it wasn't a plane. It was just, like, sitting there, you know, kind of glowing. And I thought, man, this is really cool. So I was watching it and watching it, and all of a sudden it started shooting, like, red lasers out from it. And so I thought, no, I've got to be seeing things here. But then it just disappeared, and I've never seen it again. You know, so I thought, well, you know, what was that? You know, so I can't say, hey, it was a UFO, because there's a military base that's pretty close to the mountains, and they may mm-hmm. be practicing with some of their new equipment, for all I know. But at first it was just, like, so cool because it was just there.
Oh, I'd love to see something like that.
You know, it was just there. There's a mountain here that I'm very drawn to called the Ladrone Peak. And from the first time that I actually noticed it, it was like just hit me with a ton of energy. And it has a history of UFOs flying into it and never flying out.
Oh.
So there's a lot of stuff down here.
Yeah, yeah, you're kind of in a hot spot.
You know, and I like it. The energy is great. You know?
That's cool. Well, you know, when I was doing the research into Roswell, which is what's so interesting about Roswell is, do you know that Roswell almost just never was?
Mm-hmm.
It never came to public knowledge. And actually, it wasn't until like the late 60s or early 70s that it had just been written off as a weather balloon crash.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until, I think it was in the 70s when Stan Friedman was doing an interview at a station, and some guy said to him, you know, if you're into this stuff, you really need to talk to this Jesse Marcel guy at Roswell. So it's 30 years later, and all of a sudden people started to look into it and see what was going on. And I think, you have several bases that sort of are down in that area, right, military
yeah.
bases?
Yeah,
yeah, so that's not surprising that you're in kind of a little hot spot of activity, that's for sure.
And then there's a town further south of me called Elephant Butte, and I was really drawn to that when I was first trying to find a location to come where I was going to build my school. And I heard just recently that at the bottom of Elephant Butte Lake is supposed to be two crashed spaceships. but I haven't had the chance to go down there and check it out yet, but I'm going to be doing that this summer.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so I mean, it's really exciting, because some of the people that I met while I've been down here, they have a lot of history, and they know the history, and it's like, okay, man, show me, you know, take me every place you can show me stuff, you know, so there's a lot of stuff down here. But let's tell the listeners a little bit, again, how to get a hold of you, Karen, your website, your email, and the name of your books.
I'll just give you a big, long list.
Okay.
Okay, well, the name of the book is Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington. It's available on Amazon.com. It's available on Barnes & Noble, a lot of the major e-tailers. It's also available on Kindle if you want to do the Kindle downloads. And we're working on getting it available for iBooks on the iPad and Nook and things like that. And hopefully within the next couple of months we'll have that taken care of as well. And you can also order it through my website, which is avalancheofspirits.com. People can email me, Karen Frazier, F-R-A-Z-I-E-R, at paranormalunderground.net. You can read my blog at paranormalunderground.net. Excuse me, or then I have my personal website, which is KarenFrazier.com, and we have the Namaste Project, which is namasteproject.org. And I would invite people, if they would like to give that a try, that 100 Days of Namaste, because it really can be life-altering if you allow it to be.
Which I think is very important, because I think people need a little shake-up these days.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, how old are your sons, Karen?
13 and 11.
Okay. So do they, you know, see ghosts? Do they have any of the psychic ability that you think you don't have, but you do?
I didn't say I didn't have it. I just said I wasn't sure. The 11-year-old, almost 12, he'll be 12 in June, is my stepson. Mm-hmm. And so there's no blood relation there. And no, I don't think he does. He tends to be a lot like his dad, kind of that. Jim, my husband, says he's as psychic as a rock, and that's probably very true. He's a scientist, and his son is very much like him. And my son, who's going to be 14 here very shortly, seems to be a little bit sensitive. He senses things here in the house. He senses things when we go to haunted places, and I wouldn't be surprised, because I have a real strong suspicion that I'm not the first woman in my family or person in my family who has had sort of these types of sensitivities. I'm sure my grandmother did, but she was a staunch Catholic and couldn't admit it to herself. And so, yeah, I think my son probably has a little bit of it.
Well, just, you know, encourage him, even though it may be a little scary and stuff, encourage him. You know, your story, Karen, is a lot of the people, you know, that are here on this planet now really have the same kind of story, thinking that they're not very psychic, but they really are. You know, they pick up things, they feel things, they know things, but mm-hmm. they don't want to make it the psychic thing, because then they may be weird, you know. So.
Well, I'm beyond worrying about being weird. I'm a paranormal reporter who goes and looks for ghosts, you know. So that ship has pretty much sailed. To me, it feels presumptuous to say, yes, I'm psychic.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any plans for any new explorations as far as haunted places right now?
I just finished this place called Robert Lang Studios in Seattle, which was totally cool, because like all of the major 90s Seattle band scene recorded there, Nirvana and Eddie Vedder and Alice in Chains. And so that was very cool for me, because I am from the 80s and 90s, and I like the grunge stuff, and it's haunted. And so that was cool. You know, I just go wherever people invite me to go. I kind of go where the wind blows me. I don't have any. We're going to spend a lot of time up at Wellington again this summer. We'd like to try and do the documentary. Mm-hmm. That didn't work out last year. I think it didn't work out last year for a reason, but that doesn't mean it's not going to.
Maybe it wasn't just the time yet, that's all.
It wasn't. It absolutely wasn't, and I think now it is.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So, yeah.
So we're just about out of time, Karen, so give out that list of website and everything again one more time, please.
Sure. ParanormalUnderground.net, KarenFrazier.com, AvalancheOfSpirits.com, and namasteproject.org and Ghost Night Media. That's the one I forgot. Ghostnightmedia.com. And it's Ghost Night, K-N-I-G-H-T, media.com.
Okay. Karen, I'd like to thank you for being on the show. I, like I told you at the very beginning, I just love topics like this.
I do too, clearly, huh?
Yeah, good. And I'm glad, you know, keep up the writing and let people know that it's out there, because it is. Maybe you might want to set up tours going up to, you know, the Wellingtons. You never know.
Funny you should ask. We're doing them this summer. They can set them up through NWPIA.com.
That must be psychic, huh?
You must be psychic.
Why don't you repeat that so people can actually check it out?
N as in Nancy, W, P as in Paul, IA.com, NWPIA.
Great. Karen, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I hope
you
enjoyed yourself.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also, happy Mother's Day, too.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you. You take care, and again, thanks for giving the time for today, especially on Mother's Day.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'd like to thank you, the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. Take care. Bye now.